This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
For many people, landing a job creating television in Hollywood is a dream, but for Stephanie Story, it was her plan B. For 15 years, Story has served as a producer on TV shows like The Writer's Room on Sundance, The Arsenio Hall Show on CBS, and the new Alec Baldwin Show on ABC. But what she really wanted to be when she grew up? A novelist. Well, her dream finally came to fruition with the publication of Oil and Marble, a novel of Leonardo and Michelangelo. The New York Times called it, quote, tremendously entertaining, adroit, and informative. I met Stephanie a year ago, read her novel, and I have to say, New York Times, you nailed it. This novel is all of those adjectives and more. This summer, the novel was released in paperback, and I was able to catch up with Stephanie in the midst of a very intense book tour to find out what it took to make her childhood dream a reality. Spoiler alert, a lot of hard work, sacrifice, and a very healthy tolerance for risk. Stephanie was kind enough to share her advice for anyone looking to make a big change in their career, whether it is to become a writer, or an apparel designer, or a food entrepreneur. If there is something in the back of your head begging you to give it a shot, listen in as Stephanie describes the possibilities of what can happen when you finally say yes. I hope you'll enjoy our conversation, but first, a word from our sponsor. What do all business owners want? Revenue, and a key to creating new revenue streams is diversifying your customer base. That is precisely the topic of our upcoming webinar, How to Diversify Your Customer Base and Grow Your Business, presented by NetSuite and Entrepreneur. And here's the really cool part, it's free. It'll be hosted by Jill Scheffelbein, a business communications expert and Entrepreneur Press author. Jill will be having a 60-minute conversation with Kara Golden, founder and CEO of healthy lifestyle brand Hint, about how entrepreneurs can think about diversification in new ways to grow their businesses. Jill and Kara will be talking about a ton of useful stuff, like how not being dependent on one product or one market helps your company become more stable. They'll also explain the four key questions you need to ask yourself to find out if making that next big move is worth the risk. How to Diversify Your Customer Base and Grow Your Business webinar will be held live on Thursday, July 26th at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and you can find it at entrepreneur.com/NetSuite. And now, back to How Success Happens. So we're talking to Stephanie Story, and imagine, if you will, that a glowing introduction preceded this little chit-chat so people know why we're talking to you. But you are in Dallas because you not only wrote a novel, you wrote a novel that did so well that it has been released in paperback this summer. Am I right or am I wrong? You can call me out if I'm wrong.
You are correct. We, Two years ago, my hardcover came out March 1st, 2016, and it was not in the contract that I was going to get a paperback. I had no idea if I was going to get a paperback or not. Basically, in the publishing industry, you have to sell enough hardcovers in order to justify them printing a new paperback. And I got word about 9 months ago that they were absolutely doing a paperback, and they put my New York Times big and flashy on the front, my New York Times review on the front. And yeah, so the paperback just came out on June 19th this summer. It's called Oil and Marble, a novel of Leonardo and Michelangelo is the full title. When I wrote it, it was just Oil and Marble. But frankly, I'm not known enough. So the PR department of my publishing house added a novel of Leonardo and Michelangelo so that people would know it was about the two great artists of the Italian Renaissance, Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo. They both lived in Florence for 5 years, from 1501 to 1505, and they hated each other, Dan, absolutely despised each other. And thank goodness they did, because those were the years they hated each other. Their rivalry drove them to create two of the greatest pieces of art in all of Western history. those are the years when Leonardo da Vinci was painting the Mona Lisa in oil, while Michelangelo was just down the street carving the David in marble.
So I read your book, Stephanie, as I told you before this, and I really did love it. I thought it was great. And, you know, as you and I, in our careers, we often meet people and befriend people who then tell you that they wrote a book, and sometimes you start reading it and you're like, oh no. But this was not that experience. It was really fantastic. And I do want to encourage anyone out there to read it. The reason I wanted to talk to you is because writing a book, the whole process, well, you tell me, is it easy or perhaps is it difficult?
Is it easy? No, the process of writing a book is arguably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And every time I get into like the middle of a novel, I go, oh my, this is not possible. I actually physically can't do this. I can't bring all of these strings together. I can't make the story work. I can't bring the characters together. It's just too difficult. It's too much. It's too long. This is impossible. Every time in the middle of writing a book, you feel that way.
And what is there a certain thing that saves you every time, or how do you overcome that?
I think every writer's different. I think I end up focusing on, okay, if I'm this frustrated with it, it means something in my story's not working. So I focus on, okay, what are just sort of the mechanics of this place in the story of how it needs to move forward? And so I just have to get a little bit more minuscule, like a little more focused on that thing. And then when it all starts clicking, it starts clicking again. And then you feel like, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever done. Yay.
Right. That's great. Well, you know, cause our audience out there, there's a lot of writers. There's also a lot of people who are trying to create all kinds of things, whether it's an apparel line or developing an app or opening a store. And, you know, a common thing that we always hear is about everyone has that moment where you wake up in the middle of the night or you're in the middle of trying something and like, my God, what have I done? You know, particularly if you're the type of person who maybe quit a lucrative job to kind of start your dream project. So do you know anything about that, Stephanie?
Yeah, it's true. I think I'm the only person who ever worked in Hollywood and it was their plan B until they got their plan A off and running. No, I was a television producer for 15 years, now 17 years, because I'm doing it a little bit right now again. But I was a television producer for 15 years. But I'd always wanted to be a novelist. It's what I've wanted to do since I was 7 years old. I wrote in the mornings before that job. I wrote in the evenings. I was producing 5 nights a week of television. I was writing on the weekends. I wrote any chance I had. And when I finally got this novel together and finally got the agent and the publisher and went through the whole thing, my husband and I decided that I would leave the television industry. We would sell our condo in Los Angeles and walk away in order to be able to go on book tour, because your debut novel, if it goes well, you can get another novel. You can get the paperback. It starts to make your career as a novelist tick forward. If the first book fails, ouch. That's hard in the publishing industry. So we literally sold our condo and used basically the money that we made on the sale of our condo. We didn't make any money. We just, you know, had equity in it and used that to fund a book tour and to go on book tour to make this little dream of mine that I've had since I was seven happen. I think it was crazy, but if since it worked, it's great.
I was going to say, so, you know, the way you relate it, it's kind of like, yeah, so then we decided to sell everything we own and hit the road and everything was great. So was the decision-making process quite that instantaneous? Like, yeah, of course we're going to do that. Or was there some consternation?
No. Oh, I struggled with leaving television for years. Because producing television is a very good job. You know, you make money, but it takes up all of your time. There's no time to really go out and focus on like a second career. You can't have a side hustle and be a television producer. It doesn't work that way.
Yes. Yeah, so back in the day, I worked on Jimmy Kimmel for a little while. And I was going to say that at the end of a day, usually going back and doing anything besides just completely vegging out and lying dormant, you know, seemed like it would be a struggle. So you went back and then would start working on a novel.
Yeah, well, usually I actually wrote on the novel in the mornings because by the end of the day, I was so spent. But sometimes around 11 or 12, I would get another hour in before I went to bed and started it all again the next morning. I was so desperate to make this thing happen. It's all I've ever wanted to do that I didn't feel like I had a choice but to get up early in the morning and stay up late and work all weekend because it's all I wanted. No, that process of leaving that career behind was terrifying because you're leaving like a paycheck behind, you're leaving your contacts behind. I had to convince a husband to go with me.
Yeah. You have a very loving husband. If he's nearby, you should hug him.
Right.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, we had to put our house on the market and keep looking at each other going, really, we're selling this? Yes, we are, because we really have no place to store it. No, it was an impossible decision. But again, I was so desperate to make it happen. I didn't feel like I had a choice. It was like, well, if I don't take this opportunity to make this work, then I'm going to look up in 10 years and I'm going to regret it.
So that's great because, you know, I think a lot of people have that idea or that thought and it nags at them, but it never feels like, is this the right time? Is this the right time? Was there some magic moment for you that told you like it was now?
Well, for me at least, I had a benefit that sometimes I think other people don't have. Although I think other people, when they're launching a business, they also have this moment in a strange way. I had a publishing date. I suddenly had your book is going to be out on March 1st, 2016. So I knew that I had to be prepared to go on the road by then. And we knew we wanted to stay on the road. Now, we didn't have it planned long at first. We're like, well, a definite 3 months and then we'll see what happens. 2 years later, it was still ongoing. So I had that date that helped spur me on. That being said, I've talked to other people who hit that date and went, well, I'll wait until I get my first royalty check, or I'll wait until it becomes a bestseller, or I'll wait until they've put off that I'll wait until. And I just refused to do that. I just picked that date as I don't care what the back of my head says. I'm going to use this as my drop dead date.
Do you feel like that was, you know, in terms of your productivity, like I'm going to work on this in the morning, I'm going to work on this in any spare time. For you, having a hard deadline was the key for you hitting that.
For all of the PR, yes. Because then, you know, after I got the book done and I got it out and we got it back from editors and we went through all of that stuff, which is the whole publishing process. But then I had to start focusing on how I was going to lay out my book tour, how I was going to get all the PR I could get, who all I could contact. I didn't have a social media platform at all when I got my publishing deal. I wasn't on Twitter. I was on Facebook, but just personally. I didn't have Instagram. I had nothing. I didn't have a blog. I had nothing. So I had to build all of that. So knowing, and the other thing that happens, which this is sort of normal in publishing as well, it was supposed to come out in June 2016, and it got moved up by 3 months. So I suddenly really had to jam-pack all of my PR into this like 4-month period and just go crazy trying to figure out how to do it. But having that deadline helped me. And then again, with the paperback coming out this summer, it helped for me to have that deadline, for me to have that date of a paperback release.
There are many novels that are published every year. Readers have many choices to make. So when you talk about social media and building your website and stuff like that, who did you look to, how did you come to your plan? How did you figure out what you were going to do to get yourself noticed?
I did those deep dives on the internet, you know, where you're just like reading every single thing that pops up. You're like, how do I get noticed? And I would write down things that made sense to me. I sat down with a friend of mine over a lot of wine who seems to be a very media savvy. And we put out 3x5 cards all over the ground with just every brainstorming idea we could come up with of people that might be interested in me. You know, I had to figure out who my audience was. I had no idea who might read Oil and Marble. And so I worked on that, and that has evolved over the last 3 years of, or two, you know, two, 3 years of learning who reads it. I had to figure out who, which media outlets might be interested in covering it and how I could weasel my way into those media outlets. Whether it was best to tag them on Twitter or was it best to find a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. It was all of those pieces. I did do a very traditional media plan for myself, just because I thought it was important starting on this new endeavor. I will tell you, it quickly went in the trash, and then I just had to adjust on the fly. I was doing it all myself. Publishing houses don't put a lot of money in PR anymore. It's just one of the things that's gone by the wayside in publishing now. So it was pretty much all me. I had a little bit of help from my publishing house, not much. A little bit of help from that friend of mine and I drinking wine. She helped me as a quote-unquote personal publicist. I paid her in wine, typically.
Nice.
my husband helped. I had friends, but I did have to sort of jettison that plan and follow what started to work. And what started to work for me tended to be schools. I spoke in a lot of high schools and junior highs and even elementary schools and colleges. I talked to them about art history, and that would just get me into schools. Not that my book is an adult literary fiction book, right? But it would be appropriate. There's nothing in it that's inappropriate for teenagers in any way. So by targeting schools, I did get a hold of libraries, and then they talked to their parents about it. And there was one day in Oxford, Mississippi, I did 5 events in one day. I taught first graders, middle school, high school, a performing arts school, and then at Ole Miss, so college. And I showed up to my book event that night, and there were people from all 5 of those events at my book event who had only heard about it that day from me.
Oh, wow.
So, and they all came. So I had little ones with their moms, like first graders who'd brought their moms. I had college students who came in, and they'd brought all of their friends, and some of them were drinking quite heavily at the book event, which is fine. It was just a fascinating mix, and that all came from, even though it was a strange thing for me to go to schools, that started to build. So as that built, I did more of it. Whatever worked, I did more of. Whatever didn't, I just didn't anymore. I didn't have time.
Stephanie, you sound incredibly lazy, if I could just say that. but I mean, I think that's amazing advice is, you know, especially if you put all this time and effort into formulating a plan and, you know, feeling like I gotta stick with this because I thought it through so well, but just to recognize this ain't working, let's go this way and to sort of learn on the fly, I think is applicable to kind of anything that anyone would be doing. So I think that's fantastic advice. Did you, now we're just talking business because I know, you know, the art of creating a book is something and defining success for how your book reads is something else entirely. But did you have in your head a goal of, okay, I got to kind of meet this goal or this signpost and then I'll know like, okay, I can do this. I can do this for a living.
My goals were actually, it was my debut novel. So my goals were pretty small because I was very skeptical about the publishing industry. The publishing industry is really hard, right? And it's in a strange place of flux with ebooks coming in. It's just a strange business right now. So my goals were pretty small, actually. I didn't think I would make a living off my first book. I didn't think there was a way in the world I would. I thought I would make a living off the 3rd or the 5th. But I thought, well, if I sell enough books that I get a paperback, I knew that that would be impressive and would help me get a publishing deal for a second book. I knew that if I could get on a couple of bestseller lists, now I thought small and local, I ended up making LA Times bestsellers list because I targeted the Book Soup's bestseller list and did like 2 other events in LA that day. And so I ended up getting on it because of my smaller target of making Book Soup's bestseller list, which is a local bookstore in Los Angeles. I ended up making the LA Times bestseller list. I wanted reviews. I wanted positive reviews because I knew that would help me build a track record. So not only did I go after people who might review it in traditional publications, but I called old professors and writer friends to ask them for blurbs. I put a tag on my email that said, hey, if you liked Oil and Marble, please review it on Goodreads and Amazon, because Goodreads and Amazon reviews help. So I had these tiny goals. I want to make a little bestseller list. I want to get a paperback. You know, do everything that I can to do that. I wanted a few reviews. I wanted to build credibility as an author. By focusing on those smaller goals, I ended up far exceeding my expectations. I think if I had shot for, I want the New York Times review, I never would have gotten it. I didn't aim for that. I aimed for beneath that and got it. I think if I'd aimed for, I want to make a living off of my first book, I never would have made it. Because I wouldn't have put the small little fundamental steps in order to sell enough books to make that a reality.
You know, as you mentioned before, you left television for a while, but you still have a toe or two in it. And, you know, pursuing your dream doesn't mean that you have to abandon your past and you don't stay connected to that. So you can kind of like bounce between those worlds whenever you need to or you have time to.
I thought for a while it meant I had to abandon my past, right? Like it was a choice. Do I follow my dream? Or do I do this job that I've always done? I thought it was a binary choice. As I've come further along on this journey, I've realized they're not binary choices, right? I still produce television now, primarily for artistic reasons. I'm around these big personalities and these people, these artists doing extraordinary things with their lives. And I get paid to research them and then sit there and listen to them talk. Well, what better training could it possibly be for me than I'm writing about these big famous artists who did these big extraordinary things? So I found that, yeah, it didn't have to be one or the other. And then actually by doing both, they feed off of each other quite well.
Building off of that, you know, for me personally, I sometimes wonder to myself, am I more inspired by, you know, reading some amazing story? Or am I more inspired by reading something that's horrible and spurs me to say, I know I can do better than that. And it sort of like makes me feel better. I mean, that's kind of a dickish way to look at it, I guess. But but we're being honest here. So sometimes, yeah. I feel like that. Does that ever occur to you? Or are you an actual human being who doesn't feel such disgusting thoughts?
I wish I could just say I was an actual human being who doesn't feel such things. No, I do all the time. I look at people and I go, ha, you didn't do it right. I did it right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful. But I do think that helps, right? Sometimes looking at other people's insanity and how they're approaching a book sale, and they just, I've seen authors just write a book, put it out, and then they just expect to sell a million copies, I guess. And they don't go out and go, they say, well, my publisher didn't send me on anything. Well, my publisher didn't send me on anything either. They didn't send me on a book tour. I did. So by watching them do that and by watching them fall flat on their face and then be heartbroken that they didn't sell any books and not understanding, because their book's actually really good. I've read it because they're people I know, but it didn't work. And they're so frustrated and they're so heartbroken. And so, yeah, I do look at that and I go, well, I don't want that to be me. I'd rather kill myself and work really hard and book the extra event I'm really tired and I really don't want to go into that bookstore to see if they're carrying copies of my book. If I go in and they're carrying copies of my book and I offer to sign them, sometimes they'll move them to the front of the store, as opposed to being buried in the back. Sometimes I'm too tired, I still do it. Because I don't wanna have that. That those people that I look and they don't do it, they fail, I don't wanna be them. I'm like terrified of it. I think that's it. I think I'm terrified of failure, Dan.
Well, I'm glad we were able to crack that nut. Well, I think everything you're saying here, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing insights, and I hope people are able to apply it to whatever they're working on, because, you know, everything you're saying, from finding out who your audience is, doing as much research as humanly possible, using every existing connection you have and just following it along, like, how can this possibly help me? Even if it can't, you know, what can I learn from it? I think that's all incredibly valuable information. And I wish you the best, because as I said, I think the book was actually really great. I really loved reading it. And your story is pretty damn inspiring, I have to say. Just to go so full tilt with it and be so tireless about it, about something you believe in, I think everyone can be inspired by that. So thank you so much for sharing all this with us.
Oh, no. And thank you for having me. It really is one of those things. The biggest thing I've learned just going off on what you said really fast was that I never knew when something was going to pay off. I never knew when some small piece of effort I put in is going to pay off a year later in some unexpected way. But as long as I make an effort, somehow all of those tiny little connections and tiny little pushes and tiny little efforts that I make pay off in the longer term. And that's what I try to remind myself. And that's what I think is so applicable to everybody.
Well, that's fantastic. I feel like we've created a David of a podcast here. We've chipped away at everything and we've left just the gold. So thank you so much and good luck. Tell the good people of Dallas we say hello.
Thank you. I will.
And thanks so much again. The book is called Marble and Oil.
Oil and marble, Dan. Oil and marble.
Marble and oil, that's the sequel.
That's right.
I think I just blew it. No. Oil and Marble, a novel of Leonardo and Michelangelo. It's a great read, written by a very great person. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
So that's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and to hear our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.